Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Rain Whelan.
And I'm Perry the Platypus.
Perry the Platypus?
Perry the Platypus?
No. Dude, how do you feel that they're bringing Phineas and Ferb back?
You know, this is the God's honest truth, okay?
Okay.
I only started watching Phineas and Ferb maybe a year and a half ago. So, like, I'd never seen it before up until that point. And so I don't really have the nostalgia factor. They can bring it back all they want. I don't care. But, yeah, Haley really liked it. And so we would put it on just for background noise or, like, for when we're about to go to bed or something, you know. And it's funny. It's great. It's a great show. I like it a lot. But, yeah, I never really watched it when it was originally on TV, so...
My Jordan did growing up, and I thought it was kind of dumb, and then I got older, and then I was like, oh wow, this is actually hysterical.
It's super good. Yeah.
And then of course you telling me that Richard O'Brien? Yes. Is their dad. And yes. I'm like, wait, Riff yes. Raff is their dad?
Yeah, Riff Raff's their dad, which is crazy.
Good name. Good name for
thanks, man.
For the penultimate episode of this season.
Yep, it's gonna be my favorite part about the episode, and it's gone.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We hope you had a great Easter. Did y'all have a good Easter, buddy?
Yes. It was busy. We went camping.
That's right, I forgot about that.
But we had stuff like in between to do, right? So, like, yeah, it was busy, but it was all right. I came home yesterday. This is a great story. We came home yesterday, and after I unpacked everything, I needed to watch the movie, right? And so I'm trying to get everything ready as fast as I can. So I'm unpacking things. I'm putting things away. I'm putting things back in the fridge, in the pantry, clothes being put away, all that stuff. And I sit down, and throughout the day, by the way, like, I've been feeling like sort of like the, you know? And I'm like, dude, what is the problem, dude? Because now I feel it on my chest, and like, I'm like, dude, what is going on? And I lift my shirt up. There is a spider in my shirt. It's been there for hours. And like, I don't freak out, but I'm, you know, I'm like, oh my God, you know, it was just like a little wolf spider. It's from the camp. And I'm like, come on, you know, like I had been feeling like little flutters, you know, whatever. And I just thought it was like the way, like I was dirty too. So I was like, it was probably just like me just not being clean or like my shirt's doing something weird. And I just kept doing this every once in a while. Spider in my shirt.
I'm surprised it didn't bite you.
Yeah, I know. It might have. I don't know. I'm not really itchy anymore. No.
Well, and I was going to say wolf spiders aren't really deadly to humans. So, no. I mean, if it did bite you, it would have hurt.
Yeah, it would have been itchy or whatever, but yeah.
I would have freaked the fuck out, dude. Yeah, like, 100%. I would have been like, ah!
Yeah, it was wild.
That's funny. My mom was in town for Easter, and we all went and saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
How was that? Okay, first off,
we don't have enough.
Okay, so I'm sure the movie is fine at best, okay? But I'm seeing photos and videos of Sir Ernie Hudson on the red carpet and stuff. This guy looks incredible, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The dude is juiced, all right? His arms are amazing. He's 78 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of funny because Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray are also in this one. And
they probably look like hot garbage compared to Ernie Hudson.
For real, dude. I wonder if they said anything to him on set.
I'm surprised they didn't write it into the script. It's like, it's almost supernatural how he looks.
Yeah. But so the movie. So did you see Afterlife?
No.
I think you should watch Afterlife. Afterlife is actually really good.
I'll do you one better. I've only seen the first one. So.
Okay, you can skip the second one. The second one. The actual Ghostbusters 2 sucks.
It's trash, right? Yeah.
Like, they've all openly said they were tricked into doing that movie.
That's fine.
But Ghostbusters Afterlife is really good. I mean, Jason Reitman, who was Ivan Reitman's son, mm-hmm. Co-wrote and directed the movie. And the movie is really good. It plays in the nostalgia, but also leading these new cast of characters. This one was really disappointing, man. Mm-hmm. Like, the writing was not there. And here's what's interesting. Jason Reitman still co-wrote it with the same guy that co-wrote Afterlife with.
Hmm.
I think the problem was, is they didn't know where to take the story going from Afterlife.
Yeah.
The only right move they made was going back to New York, because they're not in New York in Afterlife. They're in Ohio, I think.
Hmm.
Which is really, honestly, I'm like, that's really cool. That's taking Ghostbusters outside of our normal setting. So going back to New York was a good move, but they rushed the third act.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the main villain we spend no time with. Patton Oswalt info dumps and spoon feeds exposition to the audience. And then Jason Reitman also didn't direct this one. He handed over his reins to his co-writer. He let his co-writer direct it. And it's blatantly obvious that
he let directing Finn Wolfhard direct the movie. And that's crazy.
And dude, so many things that they set up in Afterlife took a back seat. Like, Finn Wolfhard took a back seat. I mean, granted, Finn doesn't really add that much to the plot of Afterlife besides being the older brother, but his character still has something to do. And his whole love subplot from Afterlife took a backseat. This one did for Ghostbusters 1 that 2 did. Like, I it see. Just that, cause so that's like, what my mom said.
I mean, a movie setting up a whole bunch of stuff and not paying it off. Gee, I wonder if that'll come up anytime soon. Oh man. That's a bummer.
But yeah.
It looked kind of fun. The movie, I have no desire to see it.
Look, it's got its moments, you know, like, legitimately it has its moments, you know. Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray are fantastic. Kumail, our boy Kumail Nanjiani's in it. He steals every scene he's in.
Wait, it's Kumail.
But it's Kumail, but it's not enough to kind of keep you engaged.
I see.
It just, and the big thing for me was the third act. The third act was just rushed right through. And the movie's only an hour and 49 minutes. And they rush that third act. It's almost like they're like, oh yeah, we were supposed to have a big climax.
Whoops.
Yeah, it's
a shame.
Yeah, like I said, because Afterlife is actually really good. Afterlife is really enjoyable. Jason did such a good job. The only other plus I give Frozen Empire is the shout out to Ivan Reitman. He gets two shout outs. Just like with Afterlife, Afterlife ends with a For Harold. So after the movie concludes, Tex shows up and says For Harold, because, you know, Harold Ramis had passed away when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they did this one, Ivan Reitman passed away. And so it ends with a For Ivan. I was like, that's nice. But what's really cool is there's a scene where Paul Rudd's character is like, do we think we should watch this movie tonight? And it's a VHS. And he turns it towards the camera and it's Cannibal Girls, which was Ivan Reitman's first film.
Oh.
And I was like, I see what y'all did there. But all in all, it was fine at best. I may buy it just to have it on the bookshelf to go with Afterlife. But
sure. I mean, yeah. Let's ask the real question. What's that Letterboxd score going to be?
Ooh. Oh yeah. I didn't score it. Mm.
Ooh.
I mean, I told mom I give it a, out of 10, probably a 6.
That's high.
But
it's higher than I would have expected.
I mean, it wasn't a bad movie in any way, but it just, here, let's see. Cause out of 5 stars, I'll give it 3 on Letterboxd, okay. But it's not going to get the like.
Nope.
It's
not going to get a like. Heart. Sorry guys.
No. And you know, man, and Carrie Coon also is fantastic. I mean, everyone's trying and like, that's, but I'm not, so,
I'm
not going to get into that
before we get started. Okay. Speaking of Carrie Coon. Okay. I'm a big fan. I love Carrie Coon. Dude, The Leftovers. I mean, need I say more? It's incredible. Anyway. So I was watching a video. It was on TikTok, of course. Good Lord. What has my life been? Anyway. It was on TikTok and it was Carrie Coon on Jimmy Fallon. Okay. And she is talking about that she has like 10,000 Blu-rays at her house, like 10,000 Blu-rays, DVDs, whatever. She said her husband loves collecting Blu-rays, DVDs, whatever. He's got 10,000 of them, right? And she's married to Tracy Letts. I don't know if you knew that.
I think we talked about this the last time. While back.
So I looked at the comments because I was like, oh, I wonder if people are going to say that's ridiculous to have that many, right? And someone stitched that video and said, oh, you'll know Tracy Letts. He was the dad in Lady Bird. I was like, excuse you. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright. Like, it was so disrespectful. Dude, like, he's so much more than the dad from Lady Bird. Go fuck yourself. I was so mad.
He's also in Afterlife too.
Is he? Tracy Letts?
Yeah, and they have a scene together, which was really fun.
But the disrespect on his name, just to say the guy from, it was just awful. I was like, no, thank you. I mean,
it's almost as bad as when, you know, Post Malone did that song with Ozzy Osbourne. And people are like, wow, who's this Ozzy Osbourne person? Like, Post Malone's really going to get him on the map. And I'm like, how dare you? He didn't survive the 70s and tons of acid for you to disrespect him like this. Oh, man. Anyway, speaking of sequels that don't pay anything fucking off, welcome back to part 3 of our end of season series. We are doing a deep dive into the Matrix saga because it wasn't a trilogy. This movie was supposed to be the trilogy, but we still have one more to get to. The Matrix Revolutions. So Jeremy, by your face, I take it you did not enjoy this one.
No, I didn't. And I wouldn't, dude, I was going in and be like, dude, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fine. We're going to get through this and it's going to be no big deal. It's, at least I'll have fun, and I didn't. So, this thing is a complete mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't like it at all. I thought, like if we were titling these episodes like we normally do, I would have titled it Knuckle Up, I guess. All right. This movie is a disaster. I didn't like it at all. And it's like it stripped everything away that I loved from the first Matrix movie, okay? Like when I tell you how little I care about
Zion,
it's like, I don't care at all. And I know that's so mean. And it's like, I need, I need to care. I need to care about Zion. I just don't. Right. And it's just like, it's all Zion. This movie's all Zion. Why? You know?
Yeah. So pretty much everything we talked about last week, the Wachowskis fumbled even harder.
Well,
which is,
and I tried watching like something about like, okay, there's gotta be something I didn't get. Right. There's something I didn't get. And then the video I watched, they had mentioned the possibility of the real world, meaning Zion, also being a simulation. And I was like, where are you getting that information from? Like, am I supposed to have inferred that from the information I was given? Because no, you know,
spoiler, it's not, it's the real world.
Oh my God.
Because the fourth one answers that question.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, and I have to keep reminding myself there's a fourth one too, because
this is the great thing about this movie. This is the great thing. This was supposed to be the end.
Mm-hmm.
This was supposed to end it all. And then they made a fucking fourth one. Which we'll get to, but Lana Wachowski was essentially forced to make that movie. Warner Brothers told her, we're going to make it with or without you, your choice. And of course, since her and her sister were the ones to give us these movies in the first place, she was like, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But again, this is the glorious thing about this movie, which for real, this is the only pro versus all the cons we're going to talk about with this one, is that this was supposed to end it. And it fucking, like, does it, knowing what we know now.
Well, like, okay. If we had watched this movie a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, I would have been like, that's it? What are we talking about? What happened? You know, what was solved? Now, what is – he won? Won what? You know? And where'd he go? So, like, assume computer heaven.
We'll get there.
I don't know, but I assume we're going to get there because there's another one of these.
Dude.
I know. I am excited. This is premature, me saying this, but I'm excited to see a upgraded interpretation of what the Matrix looks like. I'm excited about that. So, just like a 2023 version of the Matrix. That'd be cool. But
so I'm going to give you a little tease now. And then of course, when we tease next week, we'll do more, but like there's a lot of high points with Resurrections. It's going to make you so mad.
Well,
and I know exactly what's going to make you mad because it made me mad.
Okay.
But
this one made me mad, and we haven't even touched what is going on in this movie, but
go ahead. Before you do that. So the quote unquote synopsis for this one, everyone, this one picks up right where Reloaded leaves off. Neo is in this catatonic state. The machines are barreling towards Zion. They have 20 hours before Zion is completely destroyed. Neo essentially gets word from the Oracle that he has to return to the source, which is the Machine City, in order to end the war. And this is our last time in the Matrix for a good while. And the movie decides to sideline its namesake to make us watch several minutes of fighting within Zion, of them trying to defeat the machines. And then we cut to Neo and Trinity on their way to Machine City and having to deal with Bane, the possessed Mr. Smith, who blinds Neo, who can still see. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, he sees the Ben Affleck Daredevil sort of way. That's how he sees. With the rain and shit?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Which then Neo goes back into the Matrix to defeat Smith. And how he has to defeat Smith is to let Smith assimilate him so the machines can purge Smith out of the Matrix and reboot the Matrix. And the Matrix is rebooted. The war is over. That's the Matrix Revolutions. There we go. Nothing fucking happens in this fucking movie.
Well, okay. Things that truly made me upset.
Tell me these things.
How long we spent
in Zion?
Well, yes, but just like with their aliens, like exoskeleton suits with the machine guns. Like, at first I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then, you know, 30 minutes later, I'm still watching them do this. And I'm like, why? I get it. I got it. You know? Uh-huh. And it seems like maybe this was cool for the time. I'm not sure. But, like, to me, I feel like people continuously, without breaks, shooting bullets at these things seems crazy to me. Like, that seems like a crazy plan. And it's like, give them something, give them another weapon. Like, why make this the weapon? Something they have to reload. I get it builds tension. I get that, you know, there's a finite amount of these bullet things that they need to reload. Therefore, you know, it's not just like a constant stream of bullets. Like, you know, there's tension in having to reload and these people having to do that. I mean, just like, why, you know? And why did I watch it for 30 minutes? And why? I don't know, man. Like this guy who's like the guy who says knuckle up a lot. He's the...
Oh, Captain Mifune. Okay. I don't know the actor's name.
So he and the other ship captain, like, they get negative Oscars. Like, they owe me an Oscar because, like, it was way too much, right? For him, it was just too much, like, yelling and, like, too much. It was overacting. The other guy, the other ship captain guy, who doesn't want Neo to take the ship.
Oh, oh shit.
I know.
He looks like Cameron. I always confuse those two actors because he looks like Cameron.
Anyway, so his bit was just like, he was too much in a different way. He was too much in just like his like macho man sort of, like, he knows what's best, but it's like, I don't know who this guy is, right? And that's a big problem I have with these two movies in general. Like, I don't know who these people are, really, you know? And there's no introduction really to these people. They're just like, they had a conversation about who everyone was before I got there, you know?
Yeah, and see, well, and this is...
things were established without me. You know,
well, and seeing this is kind of what we were talking about last week. You know, these two movies, Reloaded and Revolutions, were, I'm assuming, written as probably one movie, or at least written as two, but a continuation of one another.
I don't know. It might have been written as one movie because you're right. It really literally picks up. It might as well have picked up mid-sentence.
Which is
fine. Picks up. I don't really have a problem with that. It's just like, you know, let's write this, you know, 1,000-page script. Let's cut it here at the 500-page mark, and there you go. You know?
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, everything I really liked about Reloaded, of, you know, seeing more of Zion and seeing more of the society, mm-hmm. you're right. We're just expected to know who all these people are.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I completely
know,
forgot who that kid was, by the way.
That his name is Kid.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
His name is The Kid.
That was unintentional. But, like, I was he the one that was simping over Neo in the first one? He was standing, right?
The one who, like, somehow always knows when Neo comes back to Zion.
I I also, like, I get, okay. There are things that I could be okay with, I think, or just be like, it's fine, I can get over it, or it's fine, they've explained it, or whatever. If it were like 60% good, if this were like a 60% movie, I'd be like, okay, that's fine, right? Like, well, for instance, they had no choice but to recast the Oracle. I get it. Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That the actress who played the Oracle in the first two movies literally passed away while they had shot her scenes for Reloaded, and then she passed away. So they had, and I like the pivot. I do that.
Yeah.
She has a new. This was a price she paid, and now she has a new look.
Yeah.
Like, but it's also lazy writing.
I would have cast someone that looked completely different, you know, an elderly African-American woman wasn't the choice because now it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, they just got close enough. It's like, make her like an old Russian man. I don't care. Right. It's like, to me, that would have been. I would have understood that change more than a subtle change, right?
Right.
But whatever. That it's nitpicky because the movie's bad. Like, well, if the again, and, I would be completely fine with it. This movie is 60% good. All right.
Well, and here's the other thing. Everything we talked about last week, all this buildup, all this setup. You know, the Wachowskis fumbled it in Reloaded. You know, they fumbled this whole philosophical debate over choice. They fumbled it in that movie. And it's like they just completely fucking forgot of all that buildup for this one.
Well,
I mean, we get a
up
little.
Up until the final fight between Neo and Agent
and Smith.
When he gets up and is like, why do you keep getting up? It's like, because I choose to. It's like, all right.
Remember when we said that in the last movie?
But see, like, Jesus. In between these two ideas that are in between the idea of choice, there is like conservatively an hour and a half of movie in between these two things. And so it's like, you didn't bring it up any other time, right? We're not sticking with this really interesting philosophy and these implications of the Matrix and the implications of like the idea itself, right? We're it's like, which we should have known better because they didn't follow through in the first one either. So
yeah,
it's,
well, and you know,
yeah,
rewatching this, I realize there's another concept that they bring up and they fumble again. It was the scene when Neo's talking with Rama and Rama's speaking of love and he's a program.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, this is so good. Where do we go from here? Oh, we're over. Oh, okay.
No, it's done.
Yeah, but that was really cool. You know, like, you know, it's a word, as Rama explains, but it's the connection that follows the word. I was like, yes, this is so good. I forgot how good this is. And I was like, oh, we're over. Oh, okay.
Well, it's over.
Cool.
Well, and you're right, because at that first, those are like the first moments of the movie, right? And, yeah, and I'm like, okay, all right, I'm with you. Right. Cause I was like, this is going to be pretty cool. I'm not going to hate this as much as I thought. I really like how this looks. We're still keeping with this green tint, which I really like in the Matrix. I like that Neo's getting more comfortable within the Matrix and he's stuck in this really interesting part of the Matrix, which is an in-between place, sort of like a purgatory of this program, where he can't leave. Like, he keeps like running and it'd be like, you know, you come out the other end. That's really cool. It's really interesting. I'm vibing, right? And then we don't do it again. And you're right. It's we are no longer, we're basically not going to go back to the Matrix until the very, very end. Maybe a time in between. I don't really remember. And then
we get a little bit when we see Smith assimilate the Oracle and Seraph and Sati.
That's true.
But that's it. That's it. And then we don't get it for the last 30 fucking minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And which, okay. I'm not expecting to get cool Matrixy stuff like we got in the first two movies, because the reason being for all of this is because Agent Smith is tainting the Matrix, right? He is, yeah. He is like overriding the Matrix with his agenda, right? Or his plan, mm-hmm. or whatever, right? So I get that it's not going to be like the cool Matrixy stuff, or like it's not going to be the same or whatever. And I honestly, I don't even remember if Monica Bellucci's even in this one.
She has one fucking line, which is, she'll do it. She'll kill everyone here because of love. And that's it.
Oh, okay.
Well, and the whole time her like titties are about to pop out.
I don't know why I don't remember that. You think I would, but I don't.
It's because that's, see, here's another thing that they fumbled.
It was yesterday. I watched this movie yesterday.
Well, it's because we meet the Merovingian and his wife, Persephone, in Reloaded, mm-hmm. right? And we're like, okay, here we go. Here's programs kind of working, not really against the Matrix, but they are exploiting the Matrix. This is really cool. And then they force feed them back to us in this one. And you're mm-hmm. like, oh, that's right. He's a pompous French asshole. And the Merovingian comes back in the next one too.
Oh, great. Can't wait.
Oh, and it's so stupid too. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I was hoping for more of those beginning elements being interwoven in this movie more. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's like 90% Zion. And I feel genuinely that Zion is very uninteresting.
And again, it's what, well, truth be told, I also was like, I don't care. But it's because of what you said. You know, we're meant to, like, we heard of Zion in the very first Matrix. Mm-hmm. You know, when Morpheus, I don't know why I said Morbius.
It's Morbin time.
When Morpheus is captured, Tank says all the captains are given codes to Zion. So that's so we know Zion exists. Mm. And then in Reloaded, we're meant to accept Zion as this last human colony. They have their own military, you know, that kind of thing. Their own infrastructure. And then they also have cool dance raves. That's cool too, I guess.
They spent a lot of time on it.
But you're right. We're meant to care, and I don't care. Like, I understand we're supposed to, because this is the last remnants of humanity that there are not plugged in. And yeah, we're racing against a ticking clock. I fully understand that.
Well, and am I to understand, and I cannot believe I'm asking this late in the game, am I to understand that the vast majority of Zion were never plugged in? Is that what I'm supposed to? Because a lot of them don't have the plugs.
I believe so. I believe Zion was founded by, I'm sure, people who were unplugged. And then over time, they had offspring.
I see. Right. And obviously they're not
unplugged. And yeah. Right. Tank and Dozer, as Tank says, they were born and bred right in Zion, you know?
Okay, gotcha. You're right.
So.
Oh, gosh, what is his name? I'm going to get it. Hold on.
Link?
Yes, Link's wife or girlfriend don't care, right? Because I see her for not even 5 minutes in the last one. Right. First off, I had to remember who she was. That took a minute. I also had to remember who the other woman was. I think that's his sister with the kids.
That was, from what I understand of this lineage, Z, Link's wife or girlfriend, she was the sister to Tank and Dozer.
Okay.
Dozer was married to the other woman.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. So they're like pals.
So they're in-laws, essentially, in a way.
Okay. Yeah, so that woman, by the way, fun fact, if I'm not mistaken, is married to Lawrence Fishburne.
Really?
The one with the kids? Yeah. They play husband and wife in Hannibal. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway. Dude, shout out to Hannibal. I forgot Lawrence Fishburne's in Hannibal, man.
Yeah.
God, that show is so good.
I know. It's incredible. Please turn us off. You're not missing anything. Go go watch Hannibal.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. My uncle, when I saw him on Sunday, he told me that he's been really enjoying our this series. And he was like, I can't wait to hear what you say about Revolutions. I'm like, oh, you're not going to like it.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to think of some positives here.
Good luck.
Well, just to even some stuff out and to sort of intercut our complaints. One of them is going to be this beginning bit in The Matrix, right? I really like the idea of a program that lies outside of it, that you can essentially just like be stuck in. I like that, right? That obviously is very short-lived, and it kind of doesn't even matter.
Like
I wish it came back or something. Make it relevant. You know,
I feel like I remember hearing or reading, maybe I'm mentally affecting myself, but I feel like I read something that the Train Man was supposed to have a bigger role.
Okay.
But because of time and because of, I believe, budget, they had to cut it.
The Train Man is really interesting. I thought his character was compelling, and I thought it was an interesting direction to go. And then it just, you know, obviously.
Okay, you said a positive here. I'm going to give a positive. Okay. I like that we got to see the architect again. And I really liked that it's essentially this almost chess game that he and the Oracle have been playing for years. Because as he says, you know, you played a very dangerous game. How long do you expect this piece to last? You know, it's almost like the Oracle has been trying to find the one to bring balance to the Force, you know, because they literally almost verbatim quote Star Wars with her whole, like, I'm here to unbalance it. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But I did really like that the Oracle shows the architect shows back up again. And it's sort of defeated. I thought that was really compelling, you know, especially considering the last movie we just saw him in he was kind of a pompous, arrogant prick.
Yeah.
Who thought he was undefeatable, but he kind of was defeated by the end of this.
Yeah. I agree. It was interesting to see him outside of that little room and to have him interact with the Oracle was cool. I guess we can go back and forth. I have a complaint.
Okay, tell me your complaint.
The way it's written, it lasted approximately five times too long that they didn't understand that Bane was Agent Smith. It's like as soon as he called him Mr. Anderson, it's like it's over. You know who it is. I don't even know why we're even like, why are we still playing this game? Like, you don't know who it is. Like, it's driving me crazy. You know, he's even talking like him, too. It's like, what else do you need? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that is interesting because that's like
crazy.
you would assume that Bane would probably usually call Neo.
Or everyone outside of the Matrix, even inside the Matrix, the only person who refers to him by his old name is Agent Smith. So even then, that's something. But then you would assume, I don't know who Bane is because that happened without me. But I assume Bane doesn't act like this. So he's acting uncharacteristically. He's calling Neo Mr. Anderson. He's threatening to kill Trinity and Neo. It's like, who do you think it is? You know, that drove me crazy.
I have a positive to give for that, though. Sure. Shout out. Hang on. Let me get his name pulled up, because I will say that actor who plays Bane, he did a really good job emulating the cadence of
Hugo Weaving. I completely
agree. Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
Ian Bliss is his name. Dude, they got a lot of Australian actors in this movie. That's insane.
It's all movies, man.
Ian Bliss. Yeah, he did such a good job. Which is upsetting because, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't, like... You're right. You're right. Like, why did it not immediately click with Neo? Like, oh shit. Like, he's possessed.
And listen, the only reason why it needs to be sped up is because the audience already knows. So it's not fun for me. It's frustrating for me, right? Yeah. It would be interesting if I didn't know that he was possessed by Agent Smith. Cool. Oh, he called him Mr. Anderson. I think I have an idea, but I'm not sure. I know for a fact he is. So since the audience already knows, I feel like we need to speed up the characters finding out, right? It's the writing as if nobody knows.
Yeah.
But the writing, you know, like, I have a lot of problems with the writing, which, you know, it's weird to say because I'm not a writer, right? Who am I to say? But everything that involved that captain and his exoskeleton, all of that dialogue is crazy. It's crazy, right? And it's also way too long. All of it's too long. All of the shooting of the squids is too long. And after a while, it's just like, it's boring after a while, which is weird to say because it's like, it's constant action. But I was bored. I almost fell asleep. So I was also tired, but that's, you know.
And you also had a spider on you.
That was before, but yeah.
So, you know, and here's the other thing. Something that rewatching this kind of drove me a little crazy. So, you know, we're supposed to have all this tension being built up with the machines breaking into Zion and all that shit. And, you know, when they learn that the hammer, that captain's ship is on its way, you know, Commander Locke is like, you know, sure, they have an EMP that can wipe out the machines, but that'll wipe us out too. It'll mess up our defense systems. But then, like... like, lets them in anyway and then berates them, you know?
That was bizarre. I'll give you that. But again, I'm so used to, at this point, I'm so used to these characters being, like, mad for no reason. So, like, because that's what the other captain's like, too, right? The other captain's just mad for no reason. I also didn't okay. So, a lot of the tension was lost on me because I don't know what's going on. I didn't understand why that ship was so important. I'm sure they said, this is user error. This is my fault that I don't know.
But, do you want me to help you?
I mean, I get it now, but when they were talking about it, they were using too much jargon that doesn't exist that I'm sort of like, I'm lost. You're talking nonsense. You're speaking the Avatar language without subtitles. Like, you made it up, right? You're making up these acronyms and this jargon and in these phrases and these words. So, like, I don't know what you're talking about, right? And so when they're talking about the ships and they're talking about how important they are, whatever, and how Jada Pinkett Smith is good at it for some reason, I don't really get her deal either. The Jada Pinkett Smith stuff drives me crazy, but only because it's her, right? So I can't – that's not the movie's fault at all.
She comes back in the next one.
Oh, that's so frustrating. So it really is because it's her. But I also like, again, her establishing her character also happened without me. Because like, I don't get that at all. Right. I get it more than I get the other people because she had a little bit more to do in Reloaded than everybody else. But barely. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ships with the plans and like this ship being super important but hard to fly, or maybe it was the route that was hard to fly. Either
it was the, route, because like the guy who looks like Cameron wanted to go a route I believe they said was going to be too obvious. So Jada Pinkett Smith was like, well, if we go this way, we could probably get around them, around all the machines. And they're like, well, this is going to be impossible. And she's like, not for me.
That's basically how she said it. She did this little
lit cigarette at him.
She did this little piece of business that made me roll my eyes, where she got in her chair. She did this thing and then she goes, bup, 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 and she like clicked buttons that obviously aren't there. And it reminded me of like logging into your computer in the morning. That she was like logging in basically, but it was like three buttons, you know? She's just a bad actor. Yeah. So the way she did it, I was just like, you know, actors like to do business. And so she was doing this piece of business with this keypad that I did not care for.
Yeah. Okay. I want your opinion on the final fight between Neo and Smith.
Okay.
Because rewatching it, because the last time I rewatched this movie, it was 6 or 7 months ago. I don't remember when. So this was a recent rewatch for me.
Mm-hmm.
Rewatching it, I was kind of like, I'm supposed to care, right? Because I kind of didn't.
Okay.
Care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, and I think it's because the action wasn't as snappy as it had been in the last two movies, especially the first one, obviously.
Yeah.
It was more just sort of kind of like an anime fight. Like they were using really big swings and, you know.
Yeah, so
like some of the visual effects I liked, like when they stopped the rain, that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I agree.
I didn't care.
This is probably going to be controversial.
Uh-oh.
Because I know how people get, but it's how you feel about any fight that involves like Superman. Like, it doesn't matter, you know? Like, it's inconsequential. Like, no one's going to die here. So, like, the stakes are so low. And with this final fight, there's this little nod to the first training session with him and Morpheus, where he does that little move with his karate arms. And he, and he beckons him to him, which I've never liked in any movie, right? I don't like it when they do this thing. I don't know why I don't like it. It's just, I don't like it. I don't think it's real. Like, who's doing that? Right.
Like, well, and it's been overused for,
yeah, that's true,
forever.
And I honestly, I don't know. It might've originated with the Matrix. I have no idea, but he does that little thing. And I think, you know, again, this was supposed to be the last movie. Right. And so you're sort of like, wow, Neo's come so far. Right. Which he has, but also you're right with this fight. It's just like, visually, it's very cool. There's a lot of cool things happening. You're right. It's a lot of Super Saiyan nonsense. Because it's just so repetitive. Like, they keep they keep making these big explosions, and then they separate, and then they get, you know, they meet up again, and they keep fighting again, and then they do this other big thing, and then they get separated again, and then they come back, and it's very repetitive. It's the same problem as every other scene in this movie, which is just it takes too long.
Well, see, and I think the reason why I don't care is because they also kind of shoehorn in earlier in this movie with the fact that Neo and Smith are opposites of one another. When the fuck was this established?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because in Reloaded, they set up that Neo set him free.
Right.
To be free, I guess, a free program within the Matrix where he's not beholden to its rules anymore.
Right.
Which, again, set up very perfectly. But now all of a sudden they're fucking opposites of one another. Like, yin to his yang. What the fuck is this shit? And I think that's another reason why I don't care. I'm like, because then if they're supposed to be opposites, then that technically means they're equal to one another. Which yeah. means this fight is a nonsense fight. It's which
I agree 100%.
I guess makes sense why Neo willingly let him assimilate him, because but then that begs the question is why fucking fight him to begin with? Like, she should have, if Neo knew the only way to win is to let him assimilate me so the machines can then purge him.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's, I don't fucking know, dude. Well,
it could be. It could be that, like, if he immediately let him assimilate him, he'll know something's up. Now, mind you, I did not understand the plan. So when he was assimilated, I was like, oh, he lost? Is that how this movie's going to end? That's kind of cool, I guess. And then, you know, that doesn't end up happening. And when that happened and then the machines did the thing and then the thing blew up or whatever, I was like, oh, like, oh, he was supposed to do that? Didn't know, you know?
Well, see, you know, and I think that maybe this is something that you and I both agree on with heist films. With heist films, we have to know the plan.
Right.
So we know when something goes wrong. Neo and the machines form a plan off screen.
Without me.
And the only line we get is, and if you fail, and Neo hits him with the goosebumps walk away, I won't. You know, like, and so we're like, okay, so what's the plan then?
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It makes sense that if Neo was just like, all right, I'm here, assimilate me, that he'd be like, I don't trust like that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to now. Now I don't want to. You know?
Now I don't want to. Maybe I just want you to stay here
yeah.
and be my butler for all the me's.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what the machines meant, like, if he fails. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I know.
But, I mean, I did warn you that this movie fucking drops the ball. Yeah. So heavily.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. I was disappointed that it wasn't super Matrix-y. It becomes a different movie. Like, everything in Zion is a different movie. Like, I don't – like, it's a movie I'm not interested in, number one. But it just seems – because I would – okay. The entire movie, I was thinking back to the first movie, and I go, what happened? How did we get here? Because this is so disjointed from where we started. And so it was always supposed to be that way. I don't know. But it's completely different and not at all what I was expecting this to end with.
You know, and again, that was the point of the series. Like, which, I mean, we're not over yet, but, you know, but, you know, this was the point of everything because, by this point, we're so far detached. We're only in the Matrix, the actual Matrix. We're only in it twice.
Yeah.
The whole fucking movie. And, like, with Reloaded, I understand why they wanted to show Zion because we need to see Zion. We heard it in the first movie. Now we need to see it. Fantastic. all we need to know is the machines are on their way to destroy Zion. Cool. The rest of the movie should have been in the fucking Matrix, or at least it should have been balanced, like what the Oracle said.
I got it.
The story should have been more balanced to where, okay, if you want us to care about Zion, don't spend 30 fucking minutes in Zion. Maybe spend half that time. Let's check in on Trinity and Neo. And then, hey, what's going on in the Matrix? Who's in the Matrix right now trying to solve this from the inside, you know?
If the architect had shown Neo on the televisions what an attack on Zion looks like, because they've done it before.
Yeah.
I would know, I don't know, I would have more context, you know, into what the plan is, what usually happens, you know, that way I know they're making a difference, right? If I know how it's supposed to go down, it's the same reason with the heist, right? If I know what's supposed to go down, I know how it's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
To me, I'm just watching all this nonsense in Zion that it's being destroyed, and I assume it's going to get fixed, because I'm, then what's the point of any of this? But I wish the architect, because he had mentioned it, right? He had mentioned that they destroy Zion all the time, right?
Yeah.
Which also begs the question, this is going to be an ignorant question.
Okay.
But because the architect mentions the frequent destruction of Zion,
uh-huh,
doesn't that make Zion a simulation because it gets rebooted?
I mean, in a way, but more rather than a simulation in a computer, it's kind of like more of a simulation in just real life, because, you know, he tells Neo, once Zion is destroyed, you'll pick 14. He'll pick men and women to essentially rebuild Zion and repopulate Zion.
I see. So the resurgence of Zion and the repopulation of Zion is done like in the real world, like it's real world rebuilding. It's real world repopulation. Okay.
But I mean, but you're right. It is technically,
but wait a minute. But then wouldn't that mean that they would know exactly what to do? You know?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, man. These these last two movies, the Wachowskis set so many dominoes up to fall in a specific order. And we can see the writing on the wall of how those dominoes are supposed to topple, but they fucking don't. They fumble the ball so much. And like, I don't get it. But again, like I just said, this was the whole point of this series, because the first movie, those dominoes fell exactly where they were supposed to go. And then it's almost like these last two. And then, of course, when we get to our finale next week, these last two, it was almost like the Wachowskis are like, okay, we want to close out the story with a trilogy. We need to make it more epic in scale. More epic in story. How do we do that? And it's like, and I know they didn't do this intentionally, but it's like, let's bring up all these concepts of like choice and you know, all these philosophical questions that we can ask of the audience and ask of the characters. And then someone was like, so they wrote the whole script and someone was like, well, hey, do you answer any of these questions? And they're like, no. They're like, oh, well, do you want to rewrite it real quick so you can answer them? No, it's fine the way it is.
No. Take a lot of work, probably, so.
I mean, we are used a lot of paper already, so we might as well just leave it.
I have to control F everything. I don't know. Okay. I think I'm just going to leave it alone.
Oh, my God. But, because again, like I mentioned last week, Reloaded is still a good movie. And then they just fumble it so hard.
Reloaded was better, for sure. That's no question, right?
And see, and like, and this has always been my main complaint with Revolutions, is it just, it adds, it adds nothing. Like, we might as well just watched a nonsense movie.
We did.
Like, I mean, we did, but you know, at least with like a nonsense, like a surrealist movie, like Eraserhead, at least we understand what's happening to a point.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they're bringing these people back for Don't Tell Me, but I'm interested because, you know, okay, first off, the reveal that Trinity is stabbed by all those cables mm-hmm. was very funny. I know it's not supposed to be funny, but you know, it's just a close up of her face. And, you know, he's like, you're going to be okay. He's like, no, I'm not. Why? And then he, like the audience, he gets a wide shot of her and she's, you know, got, you know, seven cables stabbed in her. And that's a funny reveal, man. Like, it was way more than I thought. I thought it'd just be one. But it was so many. And I thought that was really funny. And it's not supposed to be, but I'm not invested in their love anyway. It's just, it's such nonsense. That is. Him being blinded was kind of weird too. I didn't expect that, nor did it matter. But again, okay. Oh, because him being able to see the things, because it wasn't everything. Yeah. He couldn't see everything, right? He could just see like Matrix bits, right?
Yeah.
And it's a similar complaint that I have with the first movie, which is, yes, I understand Neo is special, but how and why? This is how and why again. How can you do that? Why? Why does it matter? And does it come into play? No, he just doesn't need a stick or a dog.
So, I can feel us getting closer to the wrap up.
Yep. I've done enough planning, I think.
But I'm going to go ahead and give another tease, and then I'll do then we'll do a proper tease after the wrap up, of course.
He's got eyes, and I saw the trailer. He's got eyeballs in this next one.
Now, I want you to ask me a very important question about the next one, and this is the little tease. Then we'll move on to the wrap up. Do you think any of these powers that he's been using in the real world come back in the last one?
I mean, I doubt they do.
They absolutely fucking don't.
Well, which is interesting because, again, it plays into that sort of idea of what is real, right? Is him waking up in the pod just another simulation, right? Is this like an Inception? Is this like, are we three dreams deep? Is anything new? Right? These are questions that are really interesting and that they don't explore.
Yeah. And unfortunately they give a straight answer to in the final movie, which is everything we've witnessed is how it is, the real world, the Matrix. And there we go.
How anyone was excited for this next one, I don't know.
Well, can I be perfectly honest?
Yeah.
Everyone was actually very excited for it.
Wow.
And it was because... are you ready for this answer?
Sure.
It's because it was all for Keanu, man.
That's true.
John Wick.
That's true.
John Wick had, you know, revived his career.
You're right.
You know, that's why we got a third Bill and Ted movie, which rocks, by the way. Bill and Ted... Save the World, Bill and Ted Face the Music is so good.
You're right.
John Wick,
the renaissance of Keanu Reeves is an interesting one, and you're absolutely right. The context of his career does matter in this Matrix movie and its relevance and why people would be excited, I guess. Shame Fishburne couldn't do it. I don't know why. Do you know why Fishburne couldn't do this one, this next one?
I honestly don't know.
Just said no thank you.
Or he may have been busy. I'm trying to think of what he was working on around that time. Maybe. No.
John Wick's not an excuse because he's there with Keanu.
Or maybe that was it. Maybe because he agreed to do John Wick, he was like, no, I don't think I should be in this next one. Well, and here's the other issue. So I guess we're doing the wrap up and the tease. Next week, everyone, we're completing the Matrix saga with our end of season finale, the Matrix Resurrections. A lot of the original cast don't come back for this one. Hugo Weaving didn't come back. Smith is back, but Hugo Weaving is not back. And apparently was actually very upset that he was not even asked to come back.
Yikes. It doesn't even make sense why he wouldn't be asked, because you can't even say him being older. That's not an excuse anymore, because you can put the dots on his face.
Well, so can I be real? So here's my here's the final tease for next week. And here's why I don't think Four was as good as people say it is. It's better than Revolutions.
Can't be worse.
I will give it that.
It's impossible.
It's better than Revolutions, but the problem is that Lana Wachowski, because I can't remember her sister's name. Hang on, everyone, shut the absolute Lily. Lily was not involved in this one at all. It was all Lana. I think Lily has decided to step away from writing and directing. But anyway, Lana wanted to go super fucking meta with this one. In context, because this isn't a spoiler, because this is an integral part of the fucking movie, the Matrix, the movies that we've just been reviewing these last 3 weeks, exist in the Matrix now. And that is my major problem with it. I'm like, no, you can't. Well, and they exist as movies and video games. You watch the trailer. There's literally a scene in the trailer.
Yeah, but that I didn't have a lot of context because, I didn't see these other two. And
that's true.
And watching the trailer for the fourth one, which I didn't choose to do that. It was either I was at the movie theater or I was, whatever. It was an ad or whatever. Watching it, it was just it was complete. Just nonsense. It was just a lot of stuff going on that I didn't understand.
Well,
I wasn't really paying attention either.
And we have, and speaking of cast, we have newcomers to the cast. We have Neil Patrick Harris. We have Jonathan Groff. And I'm going to just tell you now, Christina Ricci, who I was so excited to see. She has one fucking scene in the whole movie.
I like Christina Ricci. Jonathan Groff. I'm a huge fan of Jonathan
Groff. Yeah.
Frozen is one of my favorite. No, he's great in Frozen. But Mindhunter is tremendous. So I'm a big fan of his.
I think he's been petitioning them to bring it back for at least one more season.
They need to. They won't, but they need
to. But, there's another part of this movie that I don't like, but I'm not going to say it.
Okay, yeah.
It is a spoiler. No, I'm not going to say it because it would be a spoiler. But I want you to have the proper expectation of what we're about to get into, which is they're trying to take a meta context and then essentially reframe the first movie. And and it's one of my biggest complaints with the Wachowskis post Matrix, which is they hammer home the point. So like,
it makes me it makes me wonder, because if I'm not mistaken, it's these movies and Cloud Atlas. These are the only Wachowski movies I've seen.
You haven't seen Speed Racer?
No.
Watch it.
No.
You'll never forgive them ever again.
Criterion just added Bound.
Yes, they did.
In a few months, that's going to be coming out. I wonder if that's any good. Because
I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been doing a lot of reading about it because I'm kind of interested in it, because it's got Jennifer Tilly in it.
There's an author that I follow on TikTok. He's amazing. He wrote John Dies at the End.
I've seen that book.
And his videos are amazing. But anyway, he talks about Bound, and he talks about how visually stylish it is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it got them the Matrix, right? I mean, this is what, you know.
Yeah.
This is what got studios to say, okay, you can do it. And he said that Bound doesn't have a boring shot in the whole movie. So maybe I should see it, because they haven't been overwhelmed by the Matrix and its possibilities in their eyes, the possibilities. And the oversaturation of style, I think that maybe Bound would be sort of more contained in a more digestible way.
Here, I just want to look this up, and then we'll close out this episode. I'm trying to pull up the Rotten Tomatoes scores for the Wachowskis. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like, it'll show, like, their highest rated movie versus their lowest rated movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Bound is their highest rated movie.
All right. There you go. I guess that answers my question. Maybe I will see it.
Yeah. Over the Matrix. Isn't that interesting?
I never thought, by the way, I would ever see these movies. These Matrix movies.
Ooh. Bound beat The Matrix by 4%.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Well, and thankfully, buddy, after next week, you will never have to watch them ever again.
You're right. That is. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm no longer optimistic.
I'm fairly confident after next week you will agree with me that it goes 1, 2, 4, 3.
Yeah. And dude, this one was a drag. So yeah. I mean, it can't get worse, right?
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, we hope you've enjoyed part 3 of our end of season series. Excuse me. And we will see you next week for the finale.